Thought Leader Thursdays are sponsored by Associated Bank. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing a home, Associated Bank is dedicated to finding the right mortgage solution for you. Visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We're on with Don Lloyd, Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, the Foreign Exchange Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, welcome back.
Steve, good to be back.
We're going to focus in our conversation on the impacts of what's happening with Russia invading Ukraine and the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia. From your view at 10,000 feet, I know you're watching oil prices, the price of the ruble versus the dollar, wheat prices. Why don't we begin with the wheat prices situation? Because from a commodity markets perspective, this is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And you know, if you take a step back and take a look at what these markets have gone through, it really has been sort of drinking from a fire hose. I mean, to think that 2 years ago it all started with the U.S.-China trade wars. From there, it sort of went into the pandemic, supply chain issues, then the Russian-Ukraine war going on, and now we're looking at the inflation spikes. What seems to catch the headline most is, you know, the price at the pump, oil, natural gas prices. But there's a lot of other commodity prices that are also moving around, particularly the grains. And so I'm glad you brought that up. It's one of those overlooked type things, but it's going to feed and have an impact on inflationary figures and what we're paying, not at the pump, but at the grocery store. So, you know, if you really just take a step back and take a look at the grains and what's been going on there, the Russian-Ukraine geographic region, a huge supplier of grains globally. I mean, Steve, it's about 10% of global calorie production supply comes out of that region. And like with any war, when you start tearing up the land, yeah, you're not planting crops, and you're not going to be pulling out crops. So, you know, that's having a big impact, not only grains, but it spills into all the other natural resources that are coming out of Russia and coming out of that region. You know, whether that's copper, nickel, uranium, aluminum. When you take a look at the grains and the metals and the resources that come out of there, Russia, the Ukraine area can supply anywhere from 10 to 30% of a wide range of commodities. 10 to 30% globally are taken out of there. All of those prices are going up simply because of war, and that's what war does.
Well, who are the winners and losers? Let's focus in on the wheat situation first in the commodities world. Who are the winners and losers in that area?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of losers. I mean, certainly, we in the stores globally, the consumer is going to be paying a lot more when it comes to their cereals. We're going to be paying a lot more in food prices. Just think of you know, all the feeder grain that's out there. You know, everything's going to be going up in price. So, you know, certainly the consumer is going to lose. The people, the producers, the farmers over there, they're certainly going to lose as well. You know, again, when you've got tanks moving around, tearing up your fields, and bombs going off, you know, certainly there's no production that's going out and money being made. So, you know, it's just going to have this ripple effect that goes out, and that's really what commodities do. When you sit there and you think, well, you know, how in the world can a commodity overseas impact us? How much do we really import, you know, from that area? It really doesn't matter because commodities, it just, they're a global type thing. And whether it's oil or grains, it just flows around globally. So, you know, there used to be a saying down, you know, in the futures pits, you know, beans in the teens. You know, that was the big chant that went up. And here we are again. But it's just not wheat. You know, if you look at wheat, barley, rye, rapeseed, all of those future prices have hit limit up a couple times. That they are just at all-time highs, certainly, you know, into the teens. You know, when you take a look at the winter wheat, the hard red winter wheat, the soft wet red winter wheat, you know, all of those prices are just bid up, you know, to high. So who's going to win? Well, you know, traders that are on the long side of this are going to win, but everybody else is going to be paying a heck of a lot more in the stores, and, you know, the producers, they're just not going to be able to get the grains. You know, supply is going to be taken out of the market, and we're going to feel that. in the stores as hard as we're feeling oil at the gas pump.
Yeah, and the severe impact for some parts of the world will be hunger, right? I mean, we're already seeing some parts of the world that have food insecurity suffering, and this is just going to make that situation worse.
Yeah, it is. And that is definitely out there on the horizon. Another big thing that comes out of that region that's going to be impacted is fertilizer. So if you're going to sit there and say the supply of calories globally will be cut back, the available calories globally are going to be cut back and compromised. And then you're going to look at, as we move into spring, farmers planting their fields and putting fertilizer on it. And fertilizer is going to be very difficult, very hard to find, very pricey, let's put it that way. That's all just driving up prices of our food. So, you know, I think, you know, we're going to see an event like we're seeing at the gas pumps, and that's going to come through in food, to be honest with you, and that's going to be on a global basis. So, you know, I don't think inflation is going to be cooling down anytime soon.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about oil. You mentioned it a couple times there. Oil prices have been coming down after shooting up. Do you think the trend is continuing to be downward, or do you think we've not seen our highs yet?
No, I don't think we've seen highs yet. I mean, there's certainly volatility back in the market. And, you know, when you push up to, you know, the $110, $120 a barrel, and then it comes down, you know, 20% to under $100, you know, it's just a two-sided market that's going on right now. Certainly, it's a bull market. The price is going up. You know, these shortages are going to continue. And, you know, it used to be that as we came out of the pandemic, everybody's driving cars and, you know, you're converting over to the summer fuel mixture. And then all of a sudden the war broke out. And although we don't really import a lot from Russia, Europe does. And again, that commodity price globally is going to impact the whole world. And, you know, we're feeling it as much as Europe is feeling it. And, you know, would love to see some of the supply open up here in the U.S. and, you know, putting the wells open and start pumping up oil again and U.S. production. But, you know, I don't think that with the current administration, that's going against their environmental goals and objectives and promises that they made. So it's going to be in a tough spot. You know, we, the consumer, are going to pay for it. And, you know, I don't think that's going to abate anytime soon.
I know you and other investors are keeping a close eye on Russia, perhaps defaulting soon on its foreign debt obligations. Talk to us a little bit about the impact that's going to have.
Yep, more happy news. I'm telling you, we're drinking from the fire hose, and that's coming up right now. You have Russia this week that has to make some sovereign debt payments, about $117 million, and world's sort of sitting back to see if they're going to make that or not. Then you've got another $600 million between now and the end of the month, and then a large loan payoff to foreign debtors of about $2 billion that comes the beginning of April. So the question, you know, there's really one of three ways that they can do it. You know, they can pay the full amount in dollars or whatever the contract calls for, which could be dollars and it could be multiple type currencies. It depends on how the loan is written. But first bit's going to be in dollars. The second way they can do is they can miss payment and they go into default. And Russia has not been in an external default since 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution. So everybody's sort of sitting back, scratching their head about, well, you know, what happens there? Who's got Russian exposure? Who's going to be impacted? What financial institutions are going to be impacted by that? The third way they can go is to make payment, but instead of making payment in U.S. dollars or euros or Chinese yuan, they make payment in rubles, in the Russian rubles. And Putin has said that. He said, well, you know, I'll make these debt payments and I'm going to pay in rubles, which is less than a penny U.S. per ruble. I mean, the government bonds in Russia that are trading over there are about 10 to 20% of their face value. I mean, you know, there's just not a whole heck of a lot of value in those things. So that's the three ways they can go. And if Russia does pay in the ruble, then they're technically in default if the contract says, no, you have to pay these back in euros or have to pay these back in U.S. dollars. You just can't sit there and say, hey, Steve, I owe you U.S. dollars, but yeah, so the contract says, but I'm going to pay in some other currency like the ruble or something. So technically they go into default there. If they miss their payments this week, What happens is that will trigger a 30-day grace period. So for the next 30 days, should they miss the payments, you know, the world's going to sit back and say, well, you know, let's see if they're going to make any movement or what they're going to do, you know, over the next 30 days. The good news, though, and this is good news, is that Russia, even though it's a dictatorship that's going on over there and everything's, you know, pretty much locked down and controlled, the ministries of finance really do a good job in Russia. Russia, you know, their debt to GDP is only 25% of all the debt that they have, it's only 25% of GDP. They have a lot of reserves, a whole lot of reserves, and they're in gold, they're in Chinese yuan, they're in some U.S. dollars, they're in euro dollars. So they have a whole stockpile of reserves that they can use to meet their debt obligations if they have to. The problem is that half of those reserves have been frozen through sanctions, and then the other question is, with all the other sanctions, how are they going to be able to move money around?
You mentioned investors with Russian exposure, and that sort of got my attention because I'm guessing you've been having conversations with a lot of those people over the last week or so. What is the advice that you've been giving them?
Yeah, we as a bank, as Associated Bank, we do not have a lot of exposure at all to Russia. So a lot of those conversations have been being held, you know, with other institutions. So we don't get a lot of questions around that simply because we do not have a lot of clients with exposure to Russia. So, you know, fortunately, we haven't had to sit there and field a lot of those calls or run around. We're watching it when it comes to our transaction payments hedging because, you know, we do send money to customers or on behalf of customers over to Russia and Belarus and whatnot. Those have all been shut down. You know, the bank has taken the position of let's first monitor it, and then it's like, well, let's turn the thing off and avoid it. So we're just trying to avoid whatever exposure we can to protect the bank.
In the meantime, should I hold on to my rubles, or are they just going to be a souvenir at this point?
Well, right now, they're good to as wallpaper. You can certainly hold on to them. Usually what happens is when you come through an event like this, should the ruble recover because there's an end to the war or, you know, some talk, you know, then you can see it come back. But what usually happens, especially with a currency that's devalued this far, this fast, you know, they drop a few zeros off, you know, they repaper their currency, they call it the ruble, but they basically just devalue it. And like I said, they drop a few zeros off and say, you've got, you know, X amount of time, X amount of months to turn in your old stuff and get your new stuff, get the new currency. We'll see if it comes to that. Russia's nowhere near that yet. But, you know, that's usually the path these things take.
Don, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. Available anytime. You can call the trading desk at 866-524-8836.
All right. We'll see you next time, Don.
Great. Thanks, Steve.